We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Halliburton. A deep three for the lead! And baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away! Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game!
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake, shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down!
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go! Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Happy Saturday, Pacer Nation. Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. The Indiana Pacers lose in heartbreaking fashion, 129-120 to the Cleveland Cavaliers in a game, if they would have won, could have got them all the way to the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. Now, they're fighting for their playoff lives on Sunday against the Atlanta Hawks. It's a win. They're top six. If they lose, a good possibility. They are in the play-in, so there is a lot at stake, and we will have that all covered for you for today. But Fauci is here with me to talk about this game and what's at stake. Fauci, great to have you back on. President of the Jermaine O'Neal Fan Club, living life, you know, doing what he does best, winning trips to Mexico, all this fun stuff. But we got to talk about this Pacers game before you get on to Mexico.
Yeah, that's very true. And look, this was a wasted opportunity. The Pacers had a lot on the line, a big opportunity to take a step forward, like you mentioned, potentially be in the driver's seat to host, you know, home court advantage in the playoffs. I think that that would have been great. Instead, the Pacers falter to Cleveland. It's a game that you didn't necessarily expect to win. It's not like you're playing an inferior opponent, but Cleveland's been very up and down this year. And with the Orlando Magic losing and a few other things along the lines, I just felt that this was an opportunity the Pacers let slip through their fingers. It was a very close game, but unfortunately, the Pacers were plagued by a rough start in the first quarter, and I feel like they were trying to play catch-up ever since.
Yeah, and this goes back to what we just talked about with Chris Neri. Does getting off to a slow start matter? And I think in this game, it really showed how big of an impact that can have on a team. So no doubt about it. I thought the Pacers came out flat. They looked nervous. They were not playing with the same edge that they normally play with. It just did not feel like the Pacers team we've been seeing this month, really, besides that game against Brooklyn. So it was one of those things where we knew what was at stake. The Pacers knew, the Cavaliers knew. It was a high-intensity game. It was a playoff-like atmosphere watching this game. Every possession, it felt like, was so significant to what played out for the Pacers. But I just felt early on, Cleveland was the initiator with force. They got to every loose ball. They were getting to offensive rebounds, and Indiana just looked a step behind them in terms of just being active on both sides of the basketball. And I was really disappointed with that effort the way they came out, because knowing what's at stake and that's the kind of performance you put up, it kind of shows, hey, you know what, maybe this team isn't as mature as we would hope they were for such a big game like this, but maybe it's just a wake-up call to get them ready for the playoffs.
And add it to the list of wake-up calls, because the Pacers have needed quite a few of them on the year. But yeah, that's why I brought it up to Chris the other day. It's like this first quarter, I mean, it plagues them, and I worry that they're not going to be able to dig out of that hole come playoff time. And this showed in this game, no matter how close the Pacers cut it to later in the game, it was just the Pacers led 3-0, and they never led again. And I felt that one thing that I noticed when you said that they came out, they weren't really ready, 6 turnovers in the first quarter. I felt that that was just something that was just huge in terms of really getting them in that deficit. I know Cleveland led by 9, you know, at the end of the first quarter, but it was worse at times. You know, Cleveland was up by as many as 14, I believe. And I just felt that for a Pacers team that ended up committing just 13 turnovers, 6 of them came in the first quarter. I felt that that was when they made the changes, it just felt a little bit too late. But overall, I mean, you had Donovan Mitchell score 13 points to really get Cleveland out to that hot start. The Pacers, it just felt like this was there was no one in particular that was really taking over. More of a team effort, which is good at times, but you need to be able to have a guy that can go and get you a bucket. And I felt that at times, Cleveland had multiple of those players that was able to set that tone. And this was just a tough one to be able to have slip through the fingers.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why the Pacers were so bad was because their defensive coverage was just terrible. And
It was
trying to navigate through the pick-and-roll game between Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen. And Jared Allen was 13 of 14 for the game 5. Just unbelievable getting to where he wanted to at all times. I think he only hit like one shot like really outside of the paint. That was like a jumper that he hit. But for the majority of his shots, they were all right at the rim because he was able to be so effective in the pick-and-roll. And the Pacers really struggled with trying to navigate that screen and switch and turners and drop with you know, playing Jared Allen, and he's trying to keep Donovan Mitchell from blowing right by him or Darius Garland blow right by him, which it's not easy to do. Those are really good guards. But I will say this early on, I'm sure you noticed this, Andrew Nembhard was defending Darius Garland and Aaron Nesmith was guarding Donovan Mitchell. In the second half at some point, they switched that, and you kind of saw how Donovan Mitchell had a much more difficult time scoring with Andrew Nembhard as the primary defender. And the way that Andrew Nembhard is able to fight through screens and recover is a little bit sharper than what Aaron Nesmith does. Aaron Nesmith, you know, he'll commit really hard, but sometimes he's, you know, wanting that switch more, where Nembhard kind of knows, I cannot switch on this, because if I do, then that's going to put our defense in a rotation. And so he'll fight over. So it's almost to a fault sometimes that Nembhard, even when he's not involved in the play, he overhelps to try to compensate what's going to happen if they do try to attack a certain player on the starting lineup, and that's Tyrese Haliburton. Tyrese Haliburton in this game, Flatchy, I have a ton of stats here for the last 6 minutes of the game, because I went through and recorded every single play that happened and kind of wrote down what happened. Out of the 11 possessions the Cavaliers had in the final 6 minutes, 5 of them, they targeted Tyrese Haliburton and they scored, okay? Or Tyrese Haliburton did not do his job. When he wasn't targeted, he was ball watching. There was a couple plays there in the final 2 minutes when they had cut it to 2. Cavs called timeout. Max Strus left on the corner 3. They're running some pick and roll action with Garland and Mitchell and Jared Allen. Mitchell's tired. Garland tries running it. All of a sudden, shot goes up. It's missed. Tyrese Haliburton just watching the play, not even paying attention to Strus. Strus runs right in, gets the offensive rebound. Boom.
That killed me.
Three-pointer shot for the Cavs. They go back up 5. It's just like every single time there are stupid things like that that happened. And you should see in this game, look how Tyrese is just begging for anybody else to step up and play defense so he doesn't have to on these guys. And the Cavaliers were smart because they used Max Strus as a screener on back-to-back possessions in the final 4-ish, 3-ish minutes. I forget what it was exactly, but I have it here. And I was just so annoyed because I hate to be this guy, but I'm just like, you know, you got to call Tyrese out for what it is. So, you know, Strus sets a screen on Tyrese. Neesmith expects a switch. Tyrese hedges, and they leave Darius Garland open for 3. That made it 120 to 114. I'm sure you remember that play.
I did.
And then the very next play, they ran a pick and roll again. This time, Ty and Neesmith actually switched. And then Jared Allen set a screen on Turner or on Ty, putting Miles on Darius Garland. And that left Mobley open in the corner for a wide open three, which he ended up missing and airballing. But it's just little things like that. They just kept attacking Halliburton because they knew he can't guard anybody.
I fear that this is going to be the move come playoff time. I mean, everybody has watched enough film on the Pacers to know that that's probably where they're going to have opportunities. So Tyrese better be ready. And I know that we've talked about, hey, Tyrese is really good at, like, you know, timely steals, but that doesn't make you a good defender. And I think that that's something that we will have to worry about, you know, next week, you know, once the actual playoffs roll around. But it was upsetting because as many opportunities as the Pacers had late in this game, it was timely offensive rebounds, I feel like, by Cleveland. Or it was like, you know, the Pacers just couldn't get that stop. They would get a stop, but then, you know, Strus gets fouled and he's going to the free throw line for three free throws from a Halliburton foul. And it just, they could never just capitalize and have an opportunity to be like, okay, hey, the Pacers are, you know, they got an opportunity. When they did try and take the lead, I felt that Halliburton was really looking for a three-pointer when they could have tied it. Then I felt he couldn't find it. He kicks it to Turner. Turner doesn't really have a good look. Turner puts up a three, and at that point, it was just the Pacers didn't need a three. They forced it. They just couldn't get the stops. They couldn't get the baskets when they needed it most. And I think we were happy that the Pacers were even still in the game late. But it's also, and I don't want to jump the gun here, but also I wasn't a big fan of Nembhard down the line about under a minute to go. I felt like he was kind of putting up some shots. And I know you're not going to pin anything on, you know, oh, that was a bad shot to take. You know, why would you do that? But I just didn't like his final possessions either. I felt like the Pacers in the final minute or two just could not capitalize on anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I think Nembhard ended up missing two shots, I think, in the final, like, minute or something like that. And but he did hit one on Caris LeVert. I think it was on LeVert. Maybe it was. I think it was actually Strus. He hit one on Strus where he kind of absorbed that contact, hit that little floater in the paint about 8 feet away. But you're right. The big play for me was when the Pacers had cut it to two. It was 120 to 118. Donovan Mitchell was exhausted. Nembhard was suffocating him on defense. And they ended up, the Cavs threw the ball away. Darius Garland ran a pick and roll with Jared Allen. The ball goes out of bounds. The very next play, Tyrese Halliburton at the top of the key is trying to create something, can't get any separation. And he dribbles the ball for like 21 seconds before he throws it to Turner. And I see people on Twitter saying, Turner can't take that shot. Are you kidding me?
You have to take the shot.
What other shot was there? There was no other shot there. So I'm thinking to myself, are you guys watching the same game? Because Turner had a semi-open look with the shot clock expiring. He had to rush.
Look at that point.
He had to rush and take it. And let's be honest, like a rush Turner three is never going to go in. Turner is not good when he rushes a shot, but he was up against the shot clock. So that was the big one to me. And, you know, I was just so annoyed because after that, the Cavaliers call timeout. The ball goes out of bounds, and that's when that play happens where I just talked about. Strus gets the offensive rebound, and then Darius Garland hits the step-back three. But what I didn't even mention on that was because Halliburton let Strus go to the basket, now he's in scramble mode. He gets switched on to Darius Garland because, you know what, that means Aaron Nesmith has to step up and recover to Strus because Tyrese Halliburton's on no man's land, and then he's forced to defend Darius Garland. And as soon as Caris LeVert comes to set a screen to get him free, run a dribble handoff because Siakam was on Caris LeVert, Tyrese Halliburton's like, oh, thank God there's another defender here that can guard Darius Garland so I don't have to. So now he puts the 6'9" Pascal Siakam on Darius Garland, who is going to have a speed advantage. And then the very next play, Pacers, Nembhard missed a two-point shot, I think. Or no, that's where Caris LeVert fouled Nembhard. On the very next play, he hit the two free throws. That was the last one the Pacers scored, 123-120. And then, once again, the Pacers, I mean, they had great defense on the next possession, Focci. They really did. It was great D by Aaron Nesmith on Darius Garland. They were trying to run a pick and roll with him and Jared Allen and did a good job recovering on that. But once again, Tyrese Halliburton ball watches, and here comes Max Strus just sliding up a little bit on the three-point line. They pass to him. What happens? Tyrese Halliburton fouls him on a three. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I understand Nembhard had some rough offensive, you know, he shot the ball at the end of the game. Maybe he's not the guy you want shooting. Probably not. Probably the one that you don't want shooting out of all five players. But the looks that he had were open. And if Tyrese Halliburton could just be somewhat reliable on defense, just, you know, even okay on defense, he was so, so bad on defense. Yeah. And we can't take away how bad he was offensively at times too in this game. He had some terrible turnovers, five turnovers in this game.
It's just not like him. And the problem is he goes 7 of 13 from the field, which no one's going to complain about. But his 6 misses were from 3. So it's just like I felt that at times he could have been a little bit more aggressive. I mean, just shoots 1 free throw in this game. 10 three-pointers, it's a lot. And I know I show my age when I say that, but that's how it is. It's just, hey, look, 40% from 3, that's great. It is, but it's the 10 three-pointers that still feels like a lot. He took 10 of the 32 threes for the Pacers. I felt that if he had tried to get to the rim a little bit more, maybe he does put that pressure on Cleveland. Maybe he does get to the free throw line a little bit more. But for Haliburton, 13 field goal attempts. I mean, TJ McConnell had more than that in 15 less minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt that Siakam had, you know, more shots, and you could definitely live by that. But it's just, I don't know. I felt like Haliburton could have done a little bit more trying to get to the rim instead of settling for some of those threes. But the 5 turnovers, it's simply not like Haliburton. And I know the final score was a 9-point loss. It was closer than that. Mm-hmm. And if the Pacers are able to cut down 1 or 2 turnovers, if they're able to, you know, grab 1 or more, you know, defensive rebounds instead of letting Cleveland convert those into offensive rebounds and second chance points, this is a different game. And now it's like, I think, yeah, we said wake up call. This felt to me like a playoff game on the road that the Pacers didn't show up for. And I felt that, hey, when you're going to return home to, you're going to return against, you know, Atlanta on Sunday, having an opportunity to handle business, you better be ready because everything is on the line. And it's great to return home in front of your crowd and that we're going to need that crowd for this game to handle business.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They have to win on Sunday. They can't lose to the Hawks. And I mean, if they lose to the Hawks at home in a must-win situation, they don't deserve to be a top six team in the Eastern Conference.
I completely agree.
So, and I know I'm being very critical of Tyrese Haliburton, but he is the head of the snake. He is the guy that's going to take this team wherever they go. And for me personally, I'm hoping that this game is a great learning experience for him to understand the importance of defense and how much more he has to commit to that side of the basketball. We know that he's an offensive player. There's no doubt about it. But aside from the switches where he gets switched onto, just the falling asleep, like that stuff that Ben Mathurin would be yelled at and yanked out of the game for, but Tyrese Haliburton doesn't get held with the same accountability as a Ben Mathurin. Because if I was Rick Carlisle and I saw that multiple time after time again, I think I might go to TJ McConnell, who is having another terrific game. It's not like you're going to be able to like really persuade everybody like, hey, I'm going to pull Ty for TJ. But I think in that moment, it's a good learning experience for him to say, look, you're not playing right. You're not playing well. And TJ McConnell at least fights through screens, is a much scrappier defender and gives a lot of effort despite being 5 inches shorter than Tyrese Haliburton. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think that if it is a situational thing, maybe you pull Tyrese for a defensive possession, put TJ McConnell in the game, because when it was a 2-point game, you just can't rely on Haliburton to be that solid defensively. And we know this team right now with the way they're built, they don't really have a lot of room for error. So I will say this, they got back into it. Obi Toppin was fantastic once again in the third quarter, really kind of helped spearhead this Pacers comeback, cut it to 3 to go into the fourth. And it felt like anybody's game. But I think part of the reason why you saw a stronger third quarter from the bench was because there was one player not involved in the rotation, and that was Doug McDermott. The fact that he played 6 minutes in this game is one of the most head-scratching questions I have for Rick Carlisle.
It can't happen. I know it's 6 minutes. It's not a lot, but it's 6 minutes we didn't need to see. And you look at the bench. I mean, look at overall for the Pacers. 9 players scored. It was 8 players scored in double figures for this Pacers team. Great stuff. It is, but you got nothing out of McDermott in this game. And I just think moving forward, when you know the rotation is going to shorten a bit, you can't even give him the 6 minutes. I just feel like it's a liability defensively. If he's not hitting threes, he's not bringing anything to the table. And I think that, I would imagine with one regular season game to play, I don't anticipate seeing him in the playoffs, maybe a couple minutes, but that could even be a little bit too much. But you talked about Obi Toppin. He had a stretch where hit a couple baskets. I think, one, he flushed a McConnell alley-oop that I don't know why I didn't believe that Obi would be able to flush it because it seemed too high. But You throw that ball just about anywhere in the air, he's going to come down with it. That was awesome. He had a great block at the end of the third quarter as well.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Alex, I believe a sprained left ankle. I don't know what the final result is going to be in terms of if he's to miss time or not. But this would be a big loss for the Pacers because Obi Toppin has been playing some of his best basketball of the season and at least most consistent basketball. I mean, what's kind of under the radar? He had six assists in this game. Six assists for Obi? Like, wow. So that's great to see, but I think that would be a major loss because the Pacers already had, and who knows if it was just precautionary, Isaiah Jackson has a hamstring issue right now. If the Pacers are to be without Obi and Isaiah, it just makes that bench that much shorter. And I just feel like the depth on this team could take a solid hit. So that's something that I am monitoring. You know, I think that if the Pacers can maybe rest Obi against Atlanta, that could be big. But they might need Obi against Atlanta. So what are your thoughts on if the Pacers are to be without Obi Toppin for any given amount of time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that going forward with the playoffs, like, you have to shorten the rotation up a little bit, yep. And I think you have to give guys more of an extended run because, to me, Pascal Siakam playing 32 minutes, he needs to play more than 32 minutes, and he only played 32 because he came in early for Obi Toppin, who got the injury. I think he should be around 36, 38.
On a
night-to-night basis, especially with every game mattering. Miles Turner played 28 minutes in this game. When Jared Allen played 38, you mean to tell me that Jalen Smith played 20 minutes in this game and Jalen Smith was atrocious in the first half?
Yeah.
I know he played better in the second half. I will give him credit for that because he was a little bit more scrappy. 5 of 8 from the field, had much better numbers. But early on, he was really struggling, had no Isaiah Jackson to go to. And I think Isaiah Jackson could be an interesting matchup here if they were to play the Cavs in the playoffs to defend a Jared Allen. But if Obi Toppin's available, he has to play. They can't afford to not play him because he's been the second-best bench player, maybe the first-best bench player in the month of April. I think you can say McConnell's probably been number one. But
I give McConnell the nod. But
yeah,
still.
So he's right there, though. Like, he's been a huge part of that bench. They can't afford to lose him. If they do, that probably opens up a door for Jairus Walker to maybe get in there against Atlanta. Will they go to that, or will they just shorten up the rotation, take out Obi Toppin and give some of those minutes to Nesmith, Siakam, and try to play a little bit smaller and figure things out? Because Atlanta is not the biggest team, and they've kind of already, I think Jalen Johnson, Okongwu, we talked with Chris and Ari, they didn't play their last game. They're already locked in for 10, so will they even play anybody in that game on Sunday? They could play spoiler, but you just never know. But at this point, even without Obi Toppin, you got to get the job done, and I think that with an ankle injury, you would hope it wasn't too bad and he'd be able to play for the playoffs if they are able to beat the Hawks and give him about a week off to, like, really
be big,
rehab that. But you can't afford to just let him sit it out. So I do think that he's been too crucial to this team's success to just say, well, we can win without Obi. You might be able to, but you don't want to put yourself in that predicament.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I know, and that's the thing, is, like, I don't know the extent of that hamstring injury for Isaiah Jackson, but if you're to be without Isaiah and Obi, I just don't feel great about it because I know Isaiah's not playing, you know, even consistently 10 minutes a night for the Pacers or 20 minutes or anything like that, but you still want him out there for, you know, various matchups. And I just think that for Obi, it's like, this would be a really big loss. There was a time where earlier in the season, maybe even 2 months ago, where it's like, you know what, how many playoff minutes could he be getting? I don't know. Now it's like, the Pacers are clicking with Obi. So you really want him out there. If you can handle business against Atlanta, give him about a week's rest or so. That is just, it feels like it's everything. It really does feel that that's big time stuff. But for Atlanta, yeah, you don't know. Is Trae Young going to be out there as he continues to shake off some of this rust? He very well could be. But although the Pacers have had Atlanta's number, they've put up historic stats, whether it's points or assists or anything of the sort. The Pacers were breaking records against the Hawks. I don't feel that this is going to be a Pacers team that could be at risk of overlooking Atlanta because of how much is on the line. Mm-hmm. And I know we've had that issue all year, but something just feels different. Maybe it's just me once again looking at a glass half full approach, but I just feel like the Pacers know what's at stake. TJ McConnell had a quote after the game saying he knew exactly what was at stake for this game, despite the Pacers, you know, letting one slip away. I just feel that this feels like a good test for the playoffs. They didn't pass the test against Cleveland on the road. Now you have an opportunity to treat this Hawks game like a playoff game before you go into the playoffs. But Alex, there would just be something that if the Pacers were to slip to 7 or 8, that would be so deflating about this team and this season. And this season's been good, but to slip to the playoffs, it would really feel that the Pacers just really let their guard down, and there would be this like bad taste in the mouth about what could have been a really promising season to celebrate. If the Pacers, they still have an opportunity to move up. They still have the fifth seed, a chance. Sixth seed, hey, you got to win. You could even get some help. But I also think that you had a great breakdown on some of these scenarios if you want to share it.
Yeah, let me pull that up because I was not ready for that part of it yet. But
I tell you, I'm ready for it because I got your tweet screenshotted. If you want me to read it out or you read it out.
I can pull it up here real quick, but I will just say, like, not to like keep going back to this game on the Cavs, but I just want to close it out because obviously, like, we know this was a bad loss. Like, and I will say a couple things. Like, people are like, oh, I don't want to play Cleveland in any matchup. Okay, well, let me just put it this way. The fact that the Pacers did not play great basketball for really, I think they played good basketball for about 30 of the 48 minutes in this game. Yeah. They were right there to beat them. So I think that they're a little bit closer than people realize. It's just going to be a matter of like, oh, you're going to let Darius Garland, or excuse me, are you going to let Jared Allen just kind of get off like he did? You know, are the Pacers not going to shorten up that rotation? So there's a lot to look at that game and say, okay, I understand why you would be concerned. I think on paper, there's no doubt about it. The Cavaliers are a better team than the Pacers. They are deeper, mm-hmm. but they only went to an 8-man rotation in a must-win game. And I wish Rick Carlisle would have done the same thing instead of playing 10 guys. What were we thinking? I don't really understand that logic, but let's get into the scenarios here, Fauci, like you mentioned. So what is at stake seeding-wise for the Pacers on Sunday? An Indiana win and an Orlando loss guarantees the Pacers get the fifth seed, which would mean Indiana plays Cleveland in round one in a 7-game series. That means a lot could happen for Orlando still if they lose, but we just know the Pacers will get a fifth seed. If Orlando loses, they win. Now, if Indiana wins and Orlando wins, nothing changes. They stay at 6. If Indiana loses, Orlando wins, and Philly wins, that puts them in 7th. Okay, because they'd have the tiebreaker over Miami. If Miami somehow won, they'll probably win against Toronto. So that would put them at 7th. An Indiana loss paired with an Orlando loss and a Philly win puts them in 7th. Okay, an Indiana loss paired with an Orlando and Philly loss puts them in 6th. So really nothing changes there if all three teams lose. Okay, but here's where it gets tricky. An Indiana loss, an Orlando loss, a Philly win and a Miami win guarantees the Pacers 8th in the Eastern Conference. And people ask, well, how does that work? Because Miami, Indiana, and Orlando would have the same record. If you don't understand this, it's really hard to understand. But what happens first is they go by division tiebreakers here. So Miami would have the tiebreaker over Orlando head-to-head, which makes them a division winner, which gives them the edge over Indiana and Orlando in this scenario, which would make them, I believe, the 6th seed. Now, it comes down to Indiana versus Orlando head-to-head, which we know Orlando has the head-to-head tiebreaker. That puts Indiana at 8th. So, like I said, there's a lot at stake here. If you win, the highest you can get is 5th. The lowest you can get if you win is 6th, okay? If you lose, you can fall all the way to 8th. So, that would mean they'd be playing Orlando in a play-in scenario if that were the case, though. So that's a really weird thing to look at, but overall, hopefully you can break, can kind of understand that. If it's a hard time following with what I'm saying on the podcast, it's on my Twitter. You guys can check it out there. Read it. It might be a little bit more clear when you read it versus, you know, hearing someone talk about it on a pod. But it's just a lot's at stake for the Pacers.
A lot is at stake. And like we already talked about, like we beat it like a drum, that the Pacers had an opportunity to really climb in the standings. And they didn't take advantage of it. But in this scenario, it makes me sick to my stomach to think that there is a situation that the Pacers can fall to eighth on the final game of the season. So I think if the Pacers are to move up to fifth, you know what? Hey, you play Cleveland. I don't feel great about it, to your point before. Yes, the Pacers did. They tied in the season series. Both was 2-2. But this was just a bad first quarter, in my opinion. I think after that, it was a very even game. Actually, the Pacers were outscored by 9 in the first quarter, so it was actually a tied score after that for the rest of the game. But, hey, that's not always how basketball works. It is four quarters. So I feel that I don't know if there's someone that there is not a scenario really where you're going to play Orlando anymore. That's not happening.
It's off the table.
So that's off the table. So
unless
you're looking
you get
at
7-8 matchup, that's the only way. The 7-8
you're looking
matchup.
At either playing the Knicks, Cleveland, or being in the play-in. And right now, Philly's hot. They have not lost since Joel Embiid has came back. They are scorching hot right now, and Embiid actually had a knee injury. He left, but he did come back. So it makes me feel that everything is probably fine there. But man, a lot on the line against the Atlanta Hawks. But I do feel better that it's like, hey, this is a Hawks team that doesn't have anything to play for. A couple of guys are out. Like, if you can't take advantage of this, like we said, it's not only that you don't deserve to be in the sixth seed, but you don't deserve to have the expectations to win a playoff series if you can't take care of these games. And you know, hey, we're gonna be locked and loaded Sunday 1 p.m. Eastern time to take on the Hawks. Really want a home crowd that's gonna be rocking, and I think that that's gonna make a big difference, because if you can't support this Pacers team in this situation, hey, what could you expect come playoff time?
Yeah, there's a lot up for grabs here, Fauci. We don't even know who's going to be the 2 or the 3 seed, because let's just say Milwaukee loses to Orlando, and the Knicks, I think they play, I forget, the Bulls. I think they play the Bulls.
Yes, they do.
In the season.
They do. Mm-hmm.
If they win that game and the Bucks lose, then the Knicks are the 2 seed and the Bucks are the 3 seed, and that would mean that Indiana would be the 6 seed if they win, which means they play Milwaukee in the first round. So we're not even guaranteed that it's going to be the Knicks. The Cavaliers can still move up to the 3 seed if they win,
I believe.
If they win and the Knicks lose. There's a weird situation where that could happen. I think if like the Knicks and the Bucks lose and the Cavs win, they could win the division at that point, which would get them the higher seed. There's a lot at stake here because if you're looking at playoffstatus.com, there's a 46% chance the Bucks finish second, a 41% chance the Knicks finish second, and a 14% chance the Cavaliers finish second. So it's still a possibility. But now for your Pacers, if you really want to know what's at play, they cannot get a top 4 seed. There's a 32% chance they get the 5th seed, a 44% chance they get the 6th seed, a 16% chance they get the 7th seed, and an 8% chance they get the 8th seed. Heading into Friday night's game, there was only a 3% chance that they would get the 8th seed. So their odds have worsened for finishing, or it's increased, I guess, to get the 8th, but it's made it worse in terms of clinching other spots. So just a lot on the line here, but the Pacers really just kind of control their own destiny, and that's the bottom line. Win and let everything else figure itself out.
Yeah, I think that a couple questions just going into this is going to be definitely the status of Obi Toppin moving forward. I'm monitoring that ankle situation very closely. And then also just look, there's no time to waste. The Pacers have to come out with a sense of urgency in the first quarter. You don't want to be playing catch up. I knew this was going to be something that could plague them. And I just feel that I want to get off to a hotter start. I want them to come out with that sense of urgency of do or die against Atlanta, where they're able to go out there and, you know, not just be treading water and be in the game. Like, can you get up to an early advantage against Atlanta so you're not playing catch up, or just really, you know, at the edge of your seat where every play is crucial moving forward? Like, give yourself some breathing room. So That's really what I'm looking forward to against Atlanta. Hey, the Pacers managed to travel home. As you always love to say, sleep in your own bed,
here
get
we go.
Some rest, be ready to rock, and take care of business. That is what we're asking this team to do. Finish the job.
Yeah, I think you say that more than I say it now.
Hey, you bring it I up mean, every look, time. It is what it is. This is where we're at in the season. Whatever helps, you know, get back into your routine, and you know, the Pacers could very well find themselves. You know, they will find themselves on the road. So moving forward, so you know, this is their opportunity to have some time off or from traveling before the playoff starts, because you know, we ain't gonna be hosting a playoff series, that we know.
Yeah, I think it'd be great for Indiana just to win, so they can kind of figure out who they're going to play in a 7-game series and prepare accordingly, because you don't want to get yourself in playing situations. Because even if you do win one of those games, if you're 7-8 and you move on and you're playing the 2 seed or whatever, like you just don't want to flirt with that. And even though I think the Orlando Magic are struggling, and I could really see them falling to the 8 seed, like I mentioned on the last podcast, I really do feel like that's a possibility, because it's like Miami's got Toronto. They just spanked them last game. Or they were up big. I don't know if they ended up like closing the gap a little bit, but it was one of those things where it was like Miami was kind of in control the whole time. And then Milwaukee, I forget what happened with them last game. I think they may have lost, if I'm not mistaken.
But the Bucks. Let's see.
Yeah.
Well, I guess last game for them. No, the Bucks beat the Magic on
Who'd
Wednesday.
Who'd they play
night.
After that? Who'd they play Friday?
They lost to the Thunder.
Yeah, that's right. The Thunder and the Thunder are in a great spot to maybe get the 1 seed in the Western Conference. So, like I said, like Milwaukee, they're kind of up and down right now, but they probably don't want to lose and become the 3 seed versus the 2 seed. But the Giannis injury is a big thing. And hey, maybe if you're the Pacers, maybe you prefer to play Milwaukee without Giannis in a first round playoff matchup than New York. I mean, there's a lot at stake. We'll obviously talk about that on Sunday night once we know what's at play. But just to close out my thoughts on the Cavs game, there was one moment that we didn't bring up, and I wanted to talk to you about it. Quinn Buckner talked about how gassed Donovan Mitchell was in the fourth quarter. And I think it was the play where Nembhard really locked him up, and he took a really contested shot and missed it. He was breathing heavily. The Pacers did not attack him at all. That was the time when I think Tyrese passed it to Miles to make that three-point shot. Instead of attacking Donovan Mitchell, who was tired, I would have much rather have seen them kind of do what Cleveland was doing and attacking the mismatch more than their random offense. And I'm not going to discredit what they've done, because they've been a historically great offensive team all season long. They're number two in offense, even after kind of changing things up just behind the Boston Celtics, who have been phenomenal this season. I will just say this. There are going to be times when they need to be more I'm trying to think of the right word. They just need to be more accurate in terms of who they should attack and when they should attack.
Strategic.
What'd you say?
Strategic.
Strategic, yeah, detailed. Just focus and have more of an emphasis. Like, I know Rick doesn't call a lot of plays, but I think there's times when maybe Tyrese needs to let Rick have some of the reign there and call a play, because Tyrese hasn't been in these moments before. Rick has. Allow Rick to set up a play, get somebody open. And I know a lot of times when they do come out of timeouts and Rick does design a play, it usually results in a pretty good look. Hated the look that they had to start the second half. I'm sure you saw that Pascal Siakam brings the ball up. It's just a really bad turnover by Nembhard. So little things like that, you can almost be too cute trying to figure things out. But when you see a guy gassed, you cannot allow him to get off easy on defense. You have to attack him. And hopefully the Pacers learn from that.
Yeah, this was only the 8th game that Donovan Mitchell's played since the start of March. And it was by far the most minutes that he's played, most shots he's taken. So, yeah. He definitely did look gassed, and it would have been great for the Pacers to take advantage of that. But I think that either way, whoever the Pacers are going to see in the playoffs is going to be a team that they are very, very familiar with, and also at least a team that they've had success against. But we just don't want it to end the season on that type of note of slipping to the play-in, having to really continue to fight for your right just to be in the big dance. So, hey, I'm at the edge of my seat just waiting on it. I can't wait till Sunday's game. I'm happy that it's on the earlier side so we can get it over with and know who we're going to play, because we just went through 800 scenarios basically of what could happen. You know, anyone's prediction is just as good as mine of how this could play out, but no one can be for sure because still a lot on the line. But Alex, let's just take down them Hawks again. We've been waiting to play them for quite some time because it has been like a party. It's been, you know, a lot of scoring
and jinxing it,
breaking
Fauci.
These franchise records. Let's do it again.
You're jinxing it, just like you did yesterday.
What am I supposed to say? I can't look forward to the game? Like, it's just like...
You can't say, well, we've set franchise records again, and some we're waiting to play them. Are we sure we're waiting to play them?
I mean, do you remember how those three games went? We scored 157 points. We had like 40 assists in one game.
I understand.
We broke another franchise record the other game. I can't even remember. It was so many records that we were setting against them.
That's what I'm saying. You can't speak that into existence in a must
win by one. I don't care. Just win. I don't care if it's the ugliest game anyone's ever seen. If it's, you know, 101 to 100, whatever it may be, just walk out of there with a win, please.
The way you were setting it up, though, made it seem like we're about to spank the Hawks. You're not worried. We're setting franchise records. I mean, you did the same thing yesterday on Twitter before the Cavs game. You're like, the Pacers are undefeated in games that I haven't attended. Feeling good about tonight. I'm like, there we go. We're losing this game.
I mean, I don't know if I'm supposed to deactivate my Twitter or what, but it's just like,
just don't talk about anything.
Please. I mean, I can't. It's all I think about. It's just the Pacers scored over 150 points twice in those three games against Atlanta. I don't care if they score, like I said, 101 if it comes in a win, but just handle business for the sake of this fan
handle
base.
Business is fine. I don't have a
That's
problem
it.
With you saying that.
That's it. Handle
don't
it.
Talk about franchise records at this point. I don't trust this Pacers team enough to be talking about franchise records and what they've done against the Hawks previously. It's a totally different game. 1 o'clock tip-offs are always weird too because players are getting up earlier and they're not in their normal routine.
Your
will that impact
naps and stuff like that doesn't get to happen. I know a lot of players are really big on those, so hopefully they get some good sleep tonight.
Yeah, on their own bed, right?
You said it, not me.
You were setting it up, but anyway. We'll close this one out here, Fauci. We'll let everybody know where they can find us out on social media. Please do us the honors.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at underscore FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPod, STP. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok at Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, please go to youtube.com/settingthepace, a Pacers podcast where you can find all of our video content that we are putting out there. And we promise for the playoffs, we will have all that coverage for you on the YouTube channel as well as the audio platform, whichever you prefer. But please leave us a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to. If you're listening on YouTube, leave a comment below, subscribe to the channel, tell people about it. It always helps us get that word out there because there's a lot of things to be excited about if you are a Pacers fan, even though a lot still to be determined. But Fauci, if you're hoping the Pacers can rock the Hawks on Sunday afternoon and get a big win and make the playoffs and avoid the play-in, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go Pacers!